This episode was sponsored by We Feed Raw. Feeding dogs real food should not feel complicated. With We Feed Raw, it doesn't. Complete and balanced raw meals are customized for each dog's size, age, and activity level, then delivered right to the door. Just thaw, serve, and feed. No prep, no guesswork, no trying to figure out portions alone. Inside every meal is the highest quality meat, nutrient-rich organs, and premium nutrition designed to support better digestion, healthier skin and coats, and lasting energy. Real food, made practical for real life. Visit WeFeedRaw.com to get started and see today's best offer.
My first job was working at McDonald's in a pretty sketchy part of the city. We got all kinds of customers, and because I usually worked the late shift, I had to deal with some pretty odd people. I'm a bigger guy, and even though I was 17 at the time, I looked a lot older. I always felt like I could take care of myself. One night, a really thin, poor-looking woman came in. The restaurant was otherwise empty, and my coworker was on her smoke break, so it was just the two of us in the building. She smiled at me, and she seemed pleasant. "Welcome to McDonald's. What can I get you, ma'am?" She asked for a coffee. That's it. Easy enough. I got that for her, she paid, and I told her to have a nice day.
"Have a nice day?"
She acted like I'd just insulted her or something. With pure rage, she splashed her scalding hot coffee at me. It got all over my shirt. My stomach was pretty burned, so I tugged on the fabric to separate it from my skin.
"Serves you right."
I'm usually not an angry person. In fact, a lot of people call me a gentle giant because I'm so soft-spoken for such a big guy. But in that moment, I was furious. I jumped over the counter and chased her outside. She was waiting for me. I didn't touch her or anything, but I got close enough to be intimidating. I asked her why she'd attacked me like that, and she just started laughing. Then she backed away into the street. Thankfully, there were no cars coming, and she started to dance like a ballerina. I couldn't tell if she was taunting me, or if she was so crazy that she had no idea what was happening. My coworker, Jake, joined me on the sidewalk. He asked me what was going on, and I just shrugged. By then, my anger was gone. I was mostly confused. "Have a nice day, my ass." And she disappeared behind a building. A couple of weeks passed. I didn't forget about the incident, but it kind of faded from my mind. Then, one night, I was in the kitchen cleaning out the fry machine. Jake was manning the front. I heard the door open and I heard him greet another customer. I couldn't see who it was, so I didn't know that the lady had come back. A few minutes later, I heard Jake say, "Have a nice day." Then I heard the woman's voice.
"How dare you!"
I rushed to the front, but it was too late. Poor Jake was screaming and holding his face. The woman had splashed hot coffee directly into his face. She looked at me, did a curtsy, and skipped out of the building. I couldn't let her get away with this again. Jake looked seriously hurt. I raced after her, grabbed her in the parking lot, and held her hands behind her back. She was very frail, so I made sure not to hurt her, just to keep her in place. She kept struggling and snapping her teeth at me, but I wouldn't let go. As I pulled her back inside, she snapped her teeth a bit too hard and her dentures flopped out of her mouth. "Call the police, please." Jake made the call. His face was bright red. I couldn't tell if the burns were serious enough to leave scars, but he definitely looked like he was in pain. As we waited for the police to come, I asked the lady what her problem was. Why did she freak out whenever someone told her to have a nice day? I'll always remember her answer.
"I don't like when people tell me what to do."
An ambulance came to take Jake to the hospital, and a policeman put the lady in handcuffs. Another officer grabbed her fallen dentures. I had to give my statement. Pretty soon, everyone was gone, and I was alone in the building. I was really unnerved. I worried about Jake, and I couldn't stop picturing that lady's toothless face as she stared at me while the cops took her away. I knew she needed help, and I should have felt sympathy for her, but I just couldn't. I found out the next day that Jake was going to get skin grafts. The burns were really bad. Plus, one of his eyes was messed up. The doctor said he would lose some of his vision. After I visited him at the hospital, I went to the police station to find out what had happened to the lady. I had to talk to like 5 different people before I got an answer. I found out her name was Cynthia. They already let her go. Her son posted bail, so she was back home awaiting her trial. I couldn't believe it. She was violent. She needed to stay locked up. I was told that I would be called in to testify at her trial, but otherwise there was nothing I could do. For the rest of the week, I kept checking in on Jake. He was doing better. He wasn't in as much pain, but he was really upset about the damage to his eye. I felt terrible. I still had to go to work, though. I did 4 more shifts that week, constantly on edge. I had this dark feeling that Cynthia would come back. All my coworkers knew what happened, so we were prepared in case anyone saw her. That Friday night, I saw her again. She didn't enter the building. She was just standing outside the window, looking right at me and dancing. I called the police, and the dispatcher said that they'd get there in a couple of minutes. Cynthia never entered. She just kept staring and dancing. It looked like she was laughing, too, though I couldn't hear her through the window. Then, she opened the door, stuck her head inside, and shouted, "Have a nice day!" The police got there 1 minute later, but she was already gone. Jake ended up getting a bunch of money from the owner. He moved away. Cynthia got 6 months of probation. That's it. I didn't learn until the trial that she's the mother of our mayor. Thankfully, I haven't seen her again, but I still think about her a lot. What a psychopath. This story is loosely inspired from one of our subscribers. During her time at a fast food chain, she faced 2 disturbing incidents. In one case, a milkshake machine malfunctioned, and when a customer was shown how runny his shake turned out, he lost his temper and threw it at her, drenching her in chocolate. Yet, she was still expected to serve him. On another winter day, a homeless man entered, used the restroom, and politely paid for coffee. She gave it to him for free with a kind word, which unexpectedly triggered him to throw the hot drink at her. When he refused to leave, she had to involve the police. I was walking around the mall, enjoying my day, when I noticed a cute girl staring at me from the food court. She clearly seemed interested, and since I was single again, I walked over. I introduced myself. No icebreaker, just my name. She seemed to like my directness. She said her name was Christy, and she was a professional singer. I didn't believe that, but whatever. She seemed cute. So we had lunch together and exchanged numbers. I promised I'd call her.
Not if I call you first.
Oh, yeah, totally. I went home after that, and literally 20 minutes later, I'm not joking, she texted me, "I miss you already." I didn't respond. A few minutes later, she sent me that emoji of a dancing woman in a red dress. Like, what does that even mean? 3 more rapid-fire texts later, and I realized that this chick was crazy. I didn't answer her. And eventually, she stopped texting. The next day, I went into work at Jamba Juice. And guess who came in as a customer? Yep, Christy.
Wow, I didn't know you worked here.
She did. I told her yesterday. I asked her what she wanted to order, and she said she wanted me to surprise her. Then, as I was getting her drink, she asked if I wanted to hear her sing. I did not. I told her that directly. This was my place of work. There were other customers here. But she thought I was joking, so right in the middle of the room, she started belting out a song. I'm pretty sure it was from a musical because it sounded pretty Broadway, but I didn't recognize it. Maybe if she was a real singer, I'd be able to recognize the melody. She was awful. I tried to get her to stop. The other customers were squirming in their seats, and I felt so embarrassed for her.
I'll only stop singing if you go out with me tonight.
I took her outside so we could talk privately. I'm sorry, Christy, but I don't think we're a good match. I hope you understand. Once again, I was very direct with her. I knew that if I gave in just once, then she'd never leave me alone again. She nodded sadly and told me that she understood. Then she backed away, finishing her song as she went. Honestly, I was surprised that I got rid of her that easily. Crazy chicks usually can't take rejection without throwing a fit. I felt like I dodged a bullet. I went back inside and finished my shift. That night, I had a couple friends over to watch MMA. I told them all about Christy's musical number. They thought it was hilarious. We were all laughing about it, having a good time, when my buddy Jake got really quiet. His eyes were wide and he was staring at the window. I followed his gaze. And there was Christy, in my backyard, peering into the house like a raccoon. When she saw me looking, she smiled and waved, as if she wasn't trespassing on my property. "Aren't you gonna invite her in, dude? We'd love to meet the new girlfriend." I had to stop this right now. I walked outside to confront her. I told her that she was scaring me and I didn't want her wandering around my yard. She smiled and handed me a flower that she'd picked from my garden. "I don't want to see you again. Do you understand?"
"Yes, I totally understand. Goodbye."
She did a little bow and then disappeared into the night. When I got back inside, all my buddies were bursting with laughter. I didn't think it was funny, though. I thought there was something very wrong with her. And there was no doubt in my mind that she'd come back. For the next week, she kept her distance. I was starting to think that she'd finally gotten the hint. And then, on Sunday, I went to visit my grandma. I try to see her once a month. Grandma was sitting in the courtyard outside the retirement home eating an apple. We hugged, and as always, she told me that I needed to eat more. I was just too skinny. Then she said something that really alarmed me.
"Maybe your new girlfriend can start cooking for you."
I told her I didn't have a girlfriend. And she said that my girlfriend came to visit her yesterday. She described exactly what Christy looked like, and mentioned that she even sang her a song.
"She's not a very good singer, though."
I stepped to the edge of the courtyard so that Grandma couldn't hear me. Then I called Christy and told her that if she didn't leave me alone, I was going to call the police. I really laid into her. I was a lot meaner than I usually am with people, but I had to be. There was no other way to talk to this woman. She started crying, and I hung up. That was the last time I talked to her for a month, but I swear I saw her since then, hiding in crowds, watching me through windows, following me in her car. I was getting really paranoid, until finally, when I noticed her shoe prints in the mud outside my bedroom window, I finally gave up. I called her and said we could go on one real date. I'd give her one chance. And afterwards, if it didn't work out, she had to swear she'd leave me alone. So I took her out to an Italian restaurant. And to my surprise, she was on her best behavior. No singing, no inappropriate jokes or plans for the future. Just a nice meal and a normal conversation. When we were finished and I paid the bill, she looked me right in the eyes and said,
"You know, I don't think this is working anymore. Take care."
This story is loosely inspired by the real-world experience of one of our subscribers. This is what he said. "Back in school, a girl came up behind me and complimented my shirt, even though I was wearing a jacket. She seemed nervous, but sweet, and we exchanged numbers later that day. Within 30 minutes of texting, she asked me to be her boyfriend. I said yes, not thinking much of it. But things turned weird fast. She started sending singing videos and constantly asking, 'Do you think I'm cute?' and 'Do you love me?' It felt off, so I ended things less than an hour in. She took it okay. Later, I found out she'd been asking out lots of guys, and once word spread, everyone backed off. Eventually, she moved away and had a serious breakdown, walking into traffic. She survived, but clearly she was dealing with a lot. I was flying to Phoenix when the weirdest moment of my life happened. The plane was absolutely packed, and there were two separate crying babies in the back. It was just awful. And because I was on my way to my grandma's funeral, I already wasn't in the best mood. Right before we were about to take off, the seat next to me was still empty. I thought I lucked out, but literally seconds before they closed the doors, one final passenger came in. He was a short man with a bald head and an oversized business suit. He seemed normal from a distance, but as he got closer, I knew that there was something very wrong about him. He had streaks of sweat all over his wrinkled forehead, and his eyes kept darting around the cabin, like he was expecting someone to jump out and attack him. I know that some people are just naturally nervous when they fly, but this was different. He scared me. He plopped down in the seat next to me, hugged his briefcase to his chest, and stared forward. He didn't move. He didn't blink, not even to wipe the sweat from his eyes. A stewardess came over to tell him to put his briefcase under the seat. He ignored her. "Please, sir, you have to put that away." He just clutched it tighter. "Sir!" He slowly turned his head, but he didn't look at her. He looked right at me.
"She's a demon."
He waited for me to agree with him, but I just awkwardly looked out the window as if I didn't hear him. I mean, how was I supposed to respond to that? I guess he eventually gave in and put his briefcase under the seat. I wasn't looking. The stewardess left, and I just sat there, trying hard to ignore him. Even though I didn't look at him, I could feel him staring at me as the plane took off. About 20 minutes later, he started twitching in his seat. He scratched his arms and shifted around like he was on fire. I had to say something now. I got the distinct feeling that he was on some kind of substance. Are you okay? He squeezed his eyes closed and rocked back and forth.
"The demons, they followed me here."
I pressed the stewardess call button. I could see one of the flight attendants on the other side of the plane. She looked over and gave me one of those "I'll be there in a minute" looks. The man dug nervously under his shirt until he pulled out a rosary. He squeezed the beads in his hand and whispered a frantic prayer. The stewardess still wasn't coming over. She was busy talking and laughing with another passenger. I waved at her again. Suddenly, the man stopped praying. He raised the beads to his lips, kissed them, and slowly pushed the entire rosary into his mouth.
"What are you doing? Excuse me, ma'am, please!"
The stewardess rolled her eyes, obviously thinking I was a difficult passenger, and slowly walked over. The man swallowed the whole rosary. I stared at him, waiting for him to choke. He didn't. He just started whispering again.
"Stay away, demons. You can't hurt me. Demons. Demons."
When the stewardess finally reached us, her anger at me disappeared. She could see that this guy was really messed up.
"Sir, what's wrong?"
He grabbed her uniform and pulled her inches away from his face. Then he screamed,
"You're all demons!"
He let go and she stumbled backwards. Confused, she ran off, probably to get help from her coworkers. That didn't help me, though. I was stuck next to a crazy person.
"Demons! Demons! Demons!"
I scooted as far away as I could, but I didn't have much room in the window seat. Then, he stopped whispering and once again turned toward me.
"I know you're not a demon like everyone else. I can trust you, right?"
I nodded. He asked me if I had a pen. I guess he wanted to write a message or something. I had one in my pocket, and of course I gave it to him. You can't say no to someone like that. He took the pen and squeezed it tightly, but he wasn't writing anything down. He was just tapping it frantically against the back of the seat in front of him. The stewardess came back and announced that the pilot had asked him to leave. She seemed really nervous to be delivering the bad news, and I didn't understand why the pilot didn't talk to this guy himself. The man stood, his eyes wide and crazy, and he started gasping.
Demon! You're stealing my breath!
I watched in horror as he attacked that poor woman with the pen. I'd just handed him a weapon, and I didn't even know it. He swiped it through the air and jabbed it into her arm. She pulled back, and he swiped it again. He didn't seem too strong, though. He really was gasping for air. He kept sputtering out the word demons, waving that pen around like a total lunatic, until he crumbled onto the floor. It didn't take me long to realize what had happened. The rosary that he'd swallowed was still lodged in his throat. He couldn't breathe. As he clutched at his neck and made the most horrible gasping sounds, I jumped out of my seat and crouched over him. What are you doing? I didn't have time to explain that I was a nurse. I pulled the pen out of his hand and used it to give the man a tracheotomy. Thanks to my quick thinking, I saved his life. When the airport paramedics arrived, he was stable. They wheeled him off the plane. While he was on the stretcher, he weakly turned his head toward me. He couldn't speak, but he mouthed out a single word. I think he said, "Angel." I'll never know what this guy's deal was or what caused his episode. It was the craziest flight of my life. This story is loosely inspired from a real-life incident. A 31-year-old passenger on American Airlines, operated by Envoy Air from Savannah to Miami, was returning to Savannah after less than a minute in the air due to a terrifying mid-flight episode. Shortly after takeoff, the man began stomping, shaking, and incoherently yelling, causing crew to initially think that he was having a seizure. Believing, and I'm quoting, "demons followed him onto the plane," he shouted about spiritual warfare, urging his sister to pray and to, quote, "close her eyes." I had the best job in the world. I worked at a collectible shop where we had a bunch of vintage comic books, trading cards, and all sorts of cool stuff. Everything was pretty valuable and pretty expensive, so we had a security guard outside at all times. One day, I was manning the front desk, scrolling through my phone, when Freddy walked in. Our regular security guard was on vacation, so Freddy was filling in. I didn't really know him that well. He was a little younger than me, pretty friendly. Sometimes he'd bring me donuts from the bakery near his house. "Hey, since no one's here, do you think you can show me some of the stuff that I'm here to guard?" Our regular guard hadn't done anything like that, so I didn't know how to react. We had very strict rules about the merchandise. But since he was my coworker, I thought, why not? I asked him if there was anything specific that he wanted to see, and he immediately mentioned our Pokemon cards. We had a binder of them in the display. Most were pretty cheap, but we had a few ultra-rare ones that were worth thousands. I never got into Pokemon, it just wasn't my thing. But our selection drew in a lot of customers. I pulled out the binder and placed it in front of him. Wearing my plastic gloves, I flipped through the pages and showed Freddy what we had. I could tell he wasn't really paying attention. He kept glancing back toward the front door. "So, if you added all of these up, how much would this whole binder be worth?" I couldn't give him a specific answer. It was worth a lot, though. I asked him if he had any other questions. He didn't. So I closed the binder and started to put it back. That's when he leaned over the glass counter and sprayed pepper spray right into my eyes. The pain was indescribable. I had no idea that pepper spray would hurt so much, or that it would fill up your lungs. I couldn't breathe. I thrashed around blindly until I made it to the bathroom and splashed water on my face. That helped a little, but everything was still really blurry. When I stumbled back to the counter, Freddy was gone. So were all the Pokemon cards. I called the police and reported the theft. They said that they would arrive in a half hour. I guess stolen Pokemon cards weren't among their top priorities. Then I called my boss, Hank, to explain the situation. To say that Hank was furious would be an understatement. He screamed through the phone, demanding to know why I'd allowed this to happen. How was I supposed to know that our security guard was a thief? It wasn't my fault. Hank arrived before the police did. He was a fat, older guy, and he loved his store more than anything else. He'd always been nice to me before, but now he treated me like garbage. He didn't care that my eyes were puffy and crying. He said that if we didn't get his cards back, I was fired. Well, as I stood there, too angry to say anything, Hank pulled out his phone and tried Freddy's number. Surprisingly, Freddy answered right away. I only heard Hank's side of the conversation, so I didn't understand what they were talking about. It sounded like there was some kind of misunderstanding. He ended the call and turned back toward me.
Tell me exactly what Freddy looks like.
I didn't understand the question, but I answered him anyway. Young, short, kinda chubby, blonde hair. Well, then Hank showed me the contact photo on his phone. The picture was a man in his 50s. He was black. Apparently, the real Freddy, the guy that Hank actually hired, decided to work elsewhere. The guy who had been guarding our shop for the last 2 weeks was an imposter. The whole thing was a con job. He even disabled the security cameras without us knowing. I know it sounds crazy, and it was a lot of work just to steal frickin' Pokemon cards, but that's what happened. The police eventually came. We told them everything, but without Freddy's real identity, there wasn't a lot for them to work with. More than that, they really didn't seem to take this seriously. They promised they'd look into it, but I had a feeling those cards were gone forever. After they left, Hank told me again that if he didn't get those cards back, I was fired. He didn't care that none of this was my fault. I left after that. I needed to buy some drops for my eyes. I was angry at fake Freddy, but I was even angrier at Hank. I'd had this job for 3 years. I was a great worker, and the customers all liked me. I was going to drive home and sulk, but on the drive, I passed by the bakery where fake Freddy had gotten donuts. This was the neighborhood where he lived. That was the one piece of information I knew about him. I forgot to tell the police. Well, I parked right in front and went inside to ask the baker if he knew a short, chubby blonde guy who liked donuts. I was going to find him myself. The baker was super helpful, telling me the guy's real name, Tony, and his apartment number in the building across the street. I felt like a real detective. It was kind of exciting. 2 minutes later, I was knocking on his door. Donuts! Tony stupidly opened the door and I pushed my way inside. I grabbed him by the collar and demanded the cards back. Without his pepper spray, he was really easy to overpower. He immediately started to cry.
Don't hurt me. I'm sorry.
I let him go. I could already see the binder on his coffee table. I grabbed it and headed for the door. He didn't fight me. Instead, he begged me to reconsider. That binder was worth $62,000, and he suggested that we split it.
62 grand? That was way more than I realized. No wonder Hank had been so upset.
Sorry, Freddy. I made sure to use his fake name. I'm going to return this. If you come near the shop again, I'll have you arrested. And with that, I left. Feeling very proud of myself, I marched back to my car. I was all set to return the cards and get my job back. But then I thought, screw it. Hank was a terrible boss. With these cards, I didn't need to work for him anymore. 3 months later, all the cards were sold. I have enough in my bank account to take a nice, long vacation. I haven't been back to the shop since. This story was inspired from a real-world event. The Berkeley Public Safety Department was called to assist in an arrest for retail fraud at 8:49 p.m. on January 25th at 2666 Coolidge Highway. According to the report, officers were sent to Collectible Investments to help Clinton Township Police take a first-degree retail fraud suspect into custody. The suspect, a 27-year-old Mount Clemens man, allegedly stole $10,000 worth of Pokemon cards. Clinton Township Police advised Berkeley officers that the suspect had walked into a business in the township and had stolen a black binder containing the cards before fleeing the location. The owner of the business called other stores in the area and confirmed that the suspect was at Collectible Investments. Dispatchers forwarded a description of the suspect while the police arrived at Collectible Investments. Officers walked in and observed the suspect sitting at a table speaking with an employee appraising the cards. Officers identified the suspect and placed him under arrest.
I never got along with my sister-in-law, Tabitha. She was my husband Derek's stepsister, so she wasn't even part of the family. But she'd always show up to events and treat me like garbage. I always complained to Derek about her, but he never did anything. He and Tabitha had a really weird, close bond. Over summer, Derek and I had a barbecue at our house, and of course, Tabitha showed up. Honestly, she looked amazing. She announced to everyone that she had just gotten a facelift. When I was alone in the kitchen, Tabitha came up to me and handed me a card to her plastic surgeon. She explained that her doctor was the best in town, and he worked really cheap. She said that the doctor had a 2-for-1 special, so she said that if I was interested, I could get a nose job for free. I can't tell you how offended I was. I knew that my nose was big, but I never had anyone talk to me so bluntly about it. I told her I wasn't interested, but she made me keep the card. After the barbecue ended, Derek asked me why I was in such a bad mood. I told him what his stepsister said to me, and of course he defended her. He said she was just trying to help. Even worse, he encouraged me to go through with the operation. He told me that I was beautiful just the way I was, but that I'd be a lot happier with a nose job. Things escalated into an argument, but eventually I gave in. All I wanted was to make Derek happy, and it seemed like he really wanted me to see the doctor. I called the number on the card and scheduled a consultation the next day. I wasn't sure if I would go through with it, but if the surgery was free, I could at least go down there and get some information. The next day, I drove to the doctor's office. It was in a really sketchy part of town. There was no sign out front, and the whole building looked like an old warehouse. I called Derek and told him I was having second thoughts, but he just told me to go in and have a look. That was it. So I walked inside and found a dirty waiting room. All the chairs were old and rusted. No one else was there except for an angry-looking nurse behind the counter. I was about to turn around and leave when the nurse called out, "Hello, ma'am. Did Tabitha send you?" I nodded. Instantly, the nurse walked towards me and grabbed my arm. She guided me down the hallway into a small room. Before I could say anything, she rushed out of the room and closed the door behind her. I looked around, and the place didn't look sterile at all. There was a table with old surgical tools in the corner, and the faucet was dripping water. I had a really bad feeling about this. I walked toward the door, ready to leave, but then the doctor entered. I couldn't see his face behind the surgical mask, but he looked very old. I started to tell him that I'd changed my mind, but he interrupted me. "Tabitha sent you, right?" he asked. "Yeah." He walked towards me and gently led me to the operating bed. "Sit right here, and I'll give you an anesthetic." This didn't make any sense. If I was here for a nose job, wouldn't he want to talk about it first? I assume I'd pick noses out of a catalog or something. I tried to stand up and walk towards the door, but he grabbed me and pulled me back down. "We haven't even started yet," he said. Now I knew for sure something was wrong. Tabitha had set me up. This wasn't a real doctor's office. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew I had to leave. The doctor pulled out a syringe and lowered it toward my arm. I frantically reached towards the table and grabbed one of the scalpels. I smacked the syringe out of his hand and then pushed the scalpel against his neck. "Tell me what's going on," I shouted. He stepped back and explained that he performed operations on a barter system. Tabitha got her facelift in exchange for some extra organs. She'd chosen me to donate them. I was horrified. I knew Tabitha hated me, but I never thought she'd do anything like this. The doctor drove the syringe on the ground, but as he was crouching down, I jumped off the bed and ran past him. I raced down the hallway while he shouted at me to stop. When I got to the waiting room, I saw the nurse standing guard at the entrance. She held up a syringe. "Looks like we have another runner." If I tried to run past her, she'd probably inject me. So I picked up one of the metal chairs and threw it at her. She ducked out of the way, and the chair banged up against the front door. Using that as a distraction, I shoved past her and raced out. Then I got in my car and sped off. As I was driving back home, I called 911. I tried to explain what happened, but the cops couldn't believe me. I guess I sounded really frantic, but he told me not to make prank calls and then hung up. My only other plan was to go back home and tell Derek. He'd know what to do. But when I pulled into our driveway, I saw Tabitha's car parked outside. I couldn't let her see me. I parked far away from the house and snuck through the yard. Then I looked through the window and saw Tabitha and my husband drinking wine together. They were sitting awfully close. That's when I realized that Derek was in on it too. He knew that his stepsister was planning to get me killed. I watched in horror as Derek slowly kissed Tabitha. It made me want to throw up. I couldn't go home, and I couldn't go to the police. So I drove all the way across town to stay with an old friend from high school. I knew that no one would find me there. I decided to stay low for a bit. That would give me time to think about my next steps. Almost immediately, my husband tried to call, but I didn't answer. Tabitha called me too. Then I got a call from an unlisted number. I answered it and heard that doctor's voice on the other end. He told me to come back and give up my kidney. He promised that I'd survive with just one. I refused, of course. There was no way I was going back there. Then the doctor started screaming at me. He said that Tabitha had gotten a very expensive surgery and he needed a payment. "I'm sorry," I said, "but if you still need someone's organs, I think my husband is available." Then I hung up. The next day, I calmed down enough to go to the police. I told them everything, and it seemed like they believed me. They sent some officers to the address I gave them, but when they got there, the building was empty. There was no sign of any doctor's office. Derek kept calling me for the next few days, but then all at once, he stopped. About a week later, I saw on the news that the police had found a dead body in the river. It was Tabitha. Her face had been surgically removed. I guess they never got their payments, so they took back their operation. I don't know what happened to my husband, though. No one has seen him in months.